From Iowa Public Radio, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble. There are plenty of sugar retreats in both chambers this week. Representative John Wills is celebrating a birthday and a wedding anniversary.
And so on behalf of that, I've brought a great treat from Dickinson County, from my hometown. It's called Hey Good Cookies, and there are plenty of them back in the back room over there. And feel free to have a Hey Good Cookie.
Representative Greg Forrestall adds to the treat table.
Well, for the 11th year, I'm spending my birthday with you. About 35 miles west of Des Moines is the city of Dexter, which is home of Drew's Famous Chocolates, hand-prepared individual chocolates. So I brought a few hundred pieces in the back, and I hope you'll celebrate with me today.
And Senator Brad Zahn announces the birthday of the Sergeant at Arms.
And he has some treats, I think, that were provided by our pages. And I'd have to also say that I share the same day with him for my birthday. And I'm providing some of my favorite treats from my local Hy-Vee, chocolate chip cookies.
With at least four birthdays this week, there are plenty of cookies and chocolates. And it's a good thing there are sugary treats in the chambers, because there is still bitterness from last week's long debate.
It is the last opportunity of decency to come into this chamber through this whole entire debate over this lousy, stinking bill.
Last week, Democratic Senator Tony Bisignano argues at the end of a contentious debate about a bill changing collective bargaining.
This has really become down to a very sad, sad conclusion to something that's been horrifying for many people, tens of thousands of people that work for a government.
It was a rare situation where the same bill was being debated in both chambers. It lasted nearly 60 hours, featuring mostly dissenting voices from Democrats. It passed on Thursday. The next day, Governor Branstad signed the controversial bill into law, where it became law effective immediately instead of the first day of the next fiscal year. Upon returning Monday, Democratic senators used their points of personal privilege to reiterate opposition to the law. Senator Liz Mathis asks Majority Leader Bill Dix to yield to questions about a group that lobbied on behalf of the bill.
Did Americans for Prosperity have any involvement in the collective bargaining bill that you know of?
I'm not aware.
She asks about involvement from Drew Klein, the Iowa director for Americans for Prosperity, a group funded by the Koch brothers.
Did he present any ideas to anyone in your caucus?
Not that I'm aware, Senator. Senator, what is the point here?
The point is, I want to know what their involvement is.
Democrats have repeatedly questioned the authorship of the collective bargaining bill. They make accusations that it was crafted by organizations like Americans for Prosperity.
Why don't you ask
where this originated?
That would be my suggestion.
And we got absolutely nowhere with it.
Senator, my suggestion is they are a registered lobbyist, I think. I would suggest, if you're curious about that, to approach them and ask them yourself.
Fueling Senator Mathis's questions about Americans for Prosperity is a picture of Drew Klein in the governor's office during the signing of the bill, a signing that was not open to members of the media, even those who specifically asked if they could attend last week. Drew Klein posted a picture on Twitter of him and the governor shaking hands moments after the bill was signed.
Things like this don't magically happen. When a person with that kind of dominance and quoted in the paper all the time, and he has been in this Capitol for a long time, that he has not talked to one of you or any of you, or the governor doesn't know who he is, I find that very, very hard to believe, especially with a snapshot taken on Friday when the collective bargaining bill was signed.
During Governor Branstad's weekly Monday morning press conference, he says he didn't arrange to have Klein at the bill signing.
I didn't have anything to do with that. I mean, he, I guess, was one of the few people that made a request to be present. And I really don't even know him. So it's not that big a deal as far as I'm concerned.
All of this illustrates that at week 7 of the session, the division between Republicans and Democrats at the Capitol is likely to continue, especially on big issues. This doesn't mean that all bills are coming down on party lines. In fact, on Wednesday afternoon, 16 bills passed in the House, 13 of them by a margin of 99-4 and 0 against. Another bill that seems to have bipartisan support could be in the chamber soon. It will limit the use of a cell phone while driving. There is already a law limiting use of a phone to text while driving, but a driver can't be pulled over for just this offense. Linn County Sheriff's Deputy Major John Godar, head of the Iowa Sheriff's Association, says the current law doesn't work.
We're only going to be writing tickets to the people that are good enough to admit the truth. The other 98% are going to lie and say, well, I was using it to make a phone call or dial a number or I wasn't texting. And that's just a problem for enforcement.
Godar says keeping the cell phone out of the driver's hands should be an enforceable law.
We don't want to find a way to go write a million more tickets. We want people to know that this is enforceable. We will be writing tickets and hopefully generate their voluntary compliance.
Iowa Public Radio's talk show River to River focuses on this bill with two senators and Pat Hoy, chief of the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau. This conversation is from a room in the law library hosted by Ben Kiefer and Joyce Russell. Pat Hoy says there is an increase in traffic fatalities, and he suspects phone use is a factor.
If you take a look nationally in 2015, there was an 8% increase in overall fatalities nationwide, and then in 2016, another 6% increase nationally. That's the biggest two-year jump in five decades.
Can we tie that 6 or 8% jump to what to cell phone use, electronics use?
Part of the issue that we have is that a lot of the crash data that we collect through police officers' crash reports do not indicate, we believe, an accurate portrayal of how many crashes are actually caused by distracted driving. So the numbers are a little tough. So that's why we're taking a look at when you see a major spike in fatalities. And then one of the avenues that we're exploring are lane departure crashes. When you're taking a look at vehicles that are leaving the roadway. And here in Iowa, over the last 5 years, we've seen a 68% fatality rate contributed to lane departure.
Here is a story that I was told recently at a bike planning gathering in Iowa City. Here's a harrowing story from a bicyclist, Cody Gieselman of Iowa City.
Riding through downtown, I had a green light. A driver on a cell phone ran the red light, and luckily at very slow speed struck me, knocked me off my bike, had some minor injuries, but I'm fine today.
You could see clearly that he was on a cell phone.
It was a woman, she stopped and, realized that she had hit me and stopped and was still on the phone. Sorry, I just hit someone with my car. I got to call you back. And, luckily there were a lot of people on the street who saw what happened. People very clearly saw that she was on the phone. Because of that, ran the red light. It seemed like she was a little bit confused as to where, like, what direction she was going. So I think maybe that was part of the problem, too, just being uncertain about where she was driving, distracted on the phone. All these things came together. Didn't even see that she was going through an intersection, let alone a red light, let alone the cyclist that was also in the path.
Okay, fortunately, no injury to Cody Gieselman. You heard speaking there, harrowing tale of distracted driving. Fortunately, it didn't end too badly. But what a shock, Senator Capuchin and Senator Bowman. I'm sure you've heard lots of stories like this.
Yes. For the last 4 years, I've been kind of the point person on this bill, working closely with Senator Capuchin. But, the letters, the emails, the phone calls I've received break your heart. It's a very emotional thing to hear that we're having these fatalities and they're preventable.
And Senator Capuchin, you were telling us that your clerk in the House, your clerk at your desk in the Senate also has a personal experience?
Correct. I believe her uncle was on a lawnmower or a small tractor of some sort and was killed from a distracted driver from behind. I'd like to say, I think, and I was asked earlier off the radio, why do I think that we'll get it passed this year? And I think it's because there's building more and more type of these accidents happening, and there's more and more people that serve in the legislature that have a personal story now, that they know someone that was affected by an accident that happened as a result of distracted driving. And so I think the momentum is building. We need to address this issue sooner rather than later, and that's why we're on this that's why we're on this mission.
The Senate passed a bill last year, the primary offense bill. It was not even taken up in the House. Representative Josh Burns, who had headed the Transportation Committee, he did yeoman's work getting a gasoline tax increase passed, but was not able to get any movement on that cell phone bill. And he said that the main argument against it is just to not have any more government regulation. I know you're in the Senate and they're in the House, but it is your party, Senator Capuccian. So how are you going to argue on that?
Sure. Well, I don't necessarily believe we need big government. We just need good government. And this would be good government as far as I'm concerned. This type of thing did not exist years ago. And to be quite honest, I think that eventually technology will take care of this issue, because everything will be voice activated and it will be hands-free. But until that time, we've got to deal with it. And who knows how long it could take, before the new vehicles on the road get as far as we need them to be. But then also that every vehicle on the road now is replaced, and that could take 20, 30 years. And so I think this is an issue that we need to address today. And I'm going to press my colleagues for this. Where it goes, I don't know. But I think, as far as what I'm hearing now, I think we can get 1002 done for sure. I know that creates problems with enforcement. 1079 would be a much better alternative, but let's take it one step at a time and see where we can get.
So to translate that, we can get the making it a primary offense, maybe a big, much bigger, heavier lift to get all handheld.
We've been working on a lot of issues in the Senate, and so I haven't focused on this as of yet, but that is, we are starting to turn it loose this week by having a subcommittee, and I think we'll get more feedback. I think the senators will get more feedback from their constituents. Obviously, there's people that are concerned about how far does this go? Will I be able to drink a coffee? Will I be able to eat a Big Mac? Those are all concerns that a lot of people have out there. But this is an issue that's totally, totally different than that in my mind.
What, in your eyes, Senator Capuccian, will sway legislators the most? People listening now, our phone lines are full of people with experiences about distracted driving. Is it these personal stories saying, this happened to me, not necessarily a fatality, perhaps an injury, perhaps they got off lucky, like Cody, the bicyclist, did, we heard a moment ago? Is that what sways your colleagues?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I believe that. And, when you see them back home, talk to them about, hey, I almost got hit by this guy today, or I did get hit last year. And those stories have an impact, and we need to hear them.
Steve has been waiting and is calling from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Steve. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I was involved in an accident in November of 2014. I was driving east on Route 30 coming through Belle Plaine going to Cedar Rapids. A young man texting and driving blew through a stop sign at about 50 to 55 miles an hour, T-boned my driver's door, rolled me into the ditch. I came out of that accident with a pelvis that was fractured in six places, four broken ribs. My right thumb was so badly dislocated because I had both hands on the wheel when I was hit. That it required surgery to put it back into place.
Oh, my God.
I am so completely in favor, and I'm so happy to hear that there's someone on both sides of the political spectrum, conservative and liberal, Democrat, Republican, whatever you want to label it. We're working for this. This is so important. I have read studies and articles that have proven that the person who is texting and driving is approximately 2 to 2.5 times more dangerous than the person who's drunk and driving.
Right. Yeah, there are studies out. Yeah.
I would love to see the primary offense rule come into play.
What about the hands-free? What about going to completely hands-free, Steve? Is that the step?
I would love to see going completely hands-free.
Okay.
I put a very small investment into a new radio in my car, and my phone rings. All I do is touch one button, and I don't have to look at anything again.
Right. Okay.
Texts, I don't worry about text messaging. I don't bother when I'm in the car. Where I'm from, it is a primary offense in Vermont. they will confiscate your device and they will hit you with a $1,000 fine. And you could well lose your license for 6 months. I would love to see something like that come here, only because while I'm not a big proponent of government regulation into every little micromanagement aspect of our lives, there are some things that, pardon the way that I'm going to put this, but there are some decisions that stupid people should not be allowed to make for themselves. One of a case in point being the seat belt law. I remember when that law first came into effect and everybody screamed about it. No one thinks twice anymore.
Okay.
You get in the car and you automatically buckle your belt.
Several good points. Thanks, Stevens. Thanks for sharing your experience. I hope your recovery is going well now, more than 2 years after that.
I'm 100%. You guys have great first responders and great medical care in Iowa.
Steve, thank you so much for your call from Cedar Rapids.
Mr. Hoy, you have some numbers on how Iowa compares to other states in passing laws like this?
We do, and you know that's one of the things that we've taken a look at is where does Iowa rate? And currently, Iowa is for texting and driving is a secondary offense. And in the nation, there are five states, and Iowa is one of those five that have a secondary texting law.
Rather than making it a primary offense.
Correct. And what we have found is when you, and it's been mentioned here a time or two before, but the enforceability aspect of it, that law enforcement find a secondary offense extremely difficult to enforce. And we have, in past history, I'll tell you, if laws are not enforced, then the compliance rates are relatively low, and I think that's what we're seeing here in Iowa. There are 14 states nationwide that do have the hands-free version of the law, so obviously there's a wide variety across the country, and you know, I think with the primary and the hands-free amendment being looked at, you know, I'm optimistic for Iowa.
Senator Bowman, does anyone in your party have concerns about the potential civil rights hazards of this? You know, we're going to make this a primary offense, and so the officer says, you look like you were texting. Well, how do you get around that problem? But like, you know, how can you tell if someone is texting?
You know, in our subcommittees and we've had a lot of people come and testify on behalf of this bill. And generally speaking, the only group that's opposed it is the ACLU. And they believe, you know, it's going to lead to more police harassment. And my view is, you know, you can always look at any issue when you're talking about the police adding powers as, you know, a potential for harassment. I believe the police are doing an incredible job of trying to enforce current laws. And, you know, by adding this statute, certainly isn't going to increase or decrease any other issue that, you know, the ACLU has in mind. If a police officer really wants to pull you over currently, it's probably going to be somewhat possible for them to do that. This isn't going to add to that component. And I guess I would add to the discussion in regard to, you know, technology is that we got people that need a deterrent out there to change their behavior. And, you know, what government does is provide laws to change behaviors, because some people are looking, they're not intentionally criminals looking to say, hey, I want to kill someone today. It's always going to be inattention. And so they think in their head that they can do this well enough. They've convinced themselves that I'm a good texter and driver. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that, but the science shows that you can't dual process well, okay?
Right. Pat Hoy, if I can go back to you with the governor's state of the condition of the state address, and he cited the death of a young Riceville bicyclist killed by a texting driver. Is there any specific legislation here, and our lawmakers too, please answer this, directed towards helping cyclists out there, or will that be addressed in perhaps a separate bill?
Well, I know with our bureau, we actually meet quite frequently with the Bicycle Coalition. And, you know, one of the things that we are saying that if you pass a tougher distracted driving bill and you address impaired driving in the state of Iowa, you will just by circumstance make the road safer for bicyclists. So we see it as a, with the current legislation that's being discussed here at the State House, if those come to be, that that bicyclists will, and pedestrians, all of us will see the benefit from them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's try to squeeze in a call or two before we go. Joe is in Osceola. Joe, I'll have to ask you to be brief, but what's on your mind?
Sure, I got a few things real quick. Thank you, Senator Capuccin. I'm actually a truck driver myself. I'm on the side of the road with hands-free.
Good job.
But, thank you.
Yes, great.
My thing is, my question is, why do you not take your legislation to the point where we are, that if we get pulled over, it's $2,750 to us and a $10,000 fine to the company as a primary pullover? And second of all, my other question was, your bill, how does it affect the citizens band radio that we use to let other drivers know when there's an accident or something ahead? Is that going to be affected by your bill?
Okay. Thank you, Joe in Osceola.
That's a good question, and I guess I haven't addressed the CB issue. That would be something that we would have to look at if we want to include that in this or not. I mean, I can understand where you guys – I don't know what – if I could ask you a question, what is the federal law for your ability to use a business – or a CB?
We're allowed to use it at any time,
okay.
Anywhere, going down the road or not. It's a one-button thing, you know, but you just put it right back when you're done.
Sure.
And it's an open line. Anybody, you know – anybody that talks on it, everyone hears it. So
that sounds,
if there's an accident, we can let other people know.
Okay.
That sounds reasonable to me. I mean, you aren't taking your eyes off the road like you are to dial a phone or text a message. So I would think that would be something that we could look at as far as, you know, for safety out there, for emergency type situations, let other people know that, yeah, that would be something that we could look at. The fines, let's get this bill passed. I mean, if we put those fines on, I think it's going to make it really tough to get this lift done. And I understand where you're coming from. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. But I really want to see this legislation move forward, and I think that would inhibit it greatly. But
okay.
I appreciate your input.
We have a couple minutes left. Thank you, Joe in Osceola. Let's go to Darren in Cedar Falls. Very quick, please, Darren, what's on your mind?
Well, I've been in the car business for 35 years with car dealers all over the country. What you're going to find is that the technology is advancing, as the senator pointed out. You're going to see, just as people are carrying key fobs today, you're going to see electronic keys actually within their phones for their vehicles. The phone manufacturers and those that are developing the ecosystems, they'll probably start with a voluntary system where you have a switch in your phone that do you want to be able to receive text while you're driving. The car will recognize that you're using your phone as your key. So maybe a suggestion for the senators, put a sunset in your law. You know, you can track what the average age of the vehicles are out on the road. Put a percentage in there that says, hey, 65% of the vehicles have this electronic key. Then the law goes away.
Interesting.
That may just satisfy some of your critics.
All right. Darren in Cedar Falls, we've just about run out of time. Closing comments from our senators here. Yep, technology perhaps will, as you mentioned before, solve our problem in a certain time. In the meantime, give us your forecast, Senator Capuccin, and then Senator Bowman, for how this bill or will sail through or not sail through the legislature to be signed by the governor.
Well, I'll go ahead first. This is Senator Capuccin. I believe that the texting while driving will go through. I just believe it will, the Senate Study Bill 1002. Senate Study Bill 1079 will be a heavier lift, but I've seen the attitude changing on this, and I think it is because of what we talked about earlier. More people have personal stories to tell and personal relatives that have had been affected by this. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful on 1079.
Senator Bowman?
I would say I'm kind of like Charlie Brown. I addressed the football, and they keep pulling it out from me. But I do know this. I have confidence in Senator Capuccin and working together with me on a bipartisan effort to get it out of the Senate. The question will be what happens with the House, because I think the governor's on board. He publicly stated in a State of State Union that he's supportive. So we'll... the Speaker, Linda Upmeyer, be supportive and get her troops rallied around it.
Senator Todd Bowman with Senator Tim Capuccin and Chief of the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau, Pat Hoy. They were in the Capitol's Law Library for the talk show River to River, hosted by Joyce Russell and Ben Kiefer. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble. In 2014, a medical marijuana bill passed. The bill expires in a few months, and now a new bill to take its place is in the process. This new bill regulates the growing, manufacturing, and distribution of medical cannabis. Carrie Anderson from Grimes is at the Capitol to advocate for the bill. She suffers from multiple sclerosis and uses medical marijuana she acquired from Colorado.
So it was a hard choice for me. I can tell you that the first night I took it, I slept through the night for the first time in 6.5 years. And that is a big deal for someone who has MS because depression is a major side effect.
Anderson says she has tried 6 other drugs from pharmacies, but they don't work as well as marijuana.
I want to stop taking gabapentin. I want to stop taking baclofen. I want to stop taking sleeping medications that leave me groggy the next day and, you know, lethargic if I want to work, those kinds of things. I want that option.
The Iowa Medical Society opposes it. Doctors want protections in the law, so there's no duty to prescribe the drug, which by federal law is still illegal. More than half the states have medical marijuana programs. Early in the session, the state reduced this fiscal year's budget by $118 million. $88 million was cut in spending and $25 million was taken from other funds. The cuts have been in place for a few weeks, and departments are starting to take action on how they can make up the difference before July. One of the departments struggling is the judicial branch. It took a $3 million cut to a budget court officials say was already underfunded to start with. This week, the Chief Justice of the Iowa Supreme Court made a rare appearance before a state House committee. Chief Justice Mark Cady tells House and Senate budget writers he's never brought his case to lawmakers directly.
I do so now for the sole purpose of sharing with you my belief that the judicial branch is at a crossroads.
Cady says results of a mid-year cut to the judicial branch budget will be devastating. Cady asks lawmakers to restore the cut or risk the problems seen during the last economic slowdown in 2009.
The level of funding for our courts could result in closing courthouses or reducing the hours of courthouses, layoffs, fewer court services in rural Iowa.
The courts are keeping unfilled positions open and have scheduled a one-day furlough for court workers in May. Another department taking a cut is the University of Iowa. It lost $8 million from the state this year. This week, the university decided to absorb $4.3 million of that cut by eliminating 2,440 scholarships. African Americans turned out for a hearing at the State House Thursday for a wide-ranging gun rights bill they say will threaten their safety if it becomes law. The bill includes stand your ground language, along with broad new rights for carrying weapons. Under the stand your ground portion, a gun owner can fire if they believe they are in danger. Laurel Clinton from Des Moines says her 3 sons may look dangerous to some because they're black.
In the states that have this law, we're target practice, and that's just basically it.
Rinaldo Johnson of Clive is there to oppose it as well. Johnson describes himself as a large black male.
I could just possibly walk in a room, somebody could get afraid, and they feel threatened. I'm on the ground with a bullet in my chest.
This bill allows lifetime concealed weapons permits, allows private gun purchases without background checks, prevents colleges and universities from banning weapons on campus, gun permits would become confidential, and weapons would not be banned here at the state capitol. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. We are at week 7. Coming soon, the state minimum wage bill. It would take away a county's ability to set their own minimum wage, something that 4 counties are doing now. A bill's on the way that could change how the Des Moines Waterworks operates. It's gaining momentum. At a city council meeting in Des Moines, it caused outburst from the public. The same could happen at the Capitol. And a few Republican legislators want to bring the death penalty back this year. It's worth note in the 1990s, Governor Branstad ran his reelection campaign on reinstating capital punishment in Iowa. And with an all-Republican House, Senate, and the governor's office, well, we'll see. Things have a way of happening in an unconventional manner here. We have 6 to 7 more weeks until the legislature is expected to end this year. Stories for today's show came from Iowa Public Radio reporter Joyce Russell and Clay Masters. The concept for Under the Golden Dome podcast is from Catherine Perkins. We have editorial support from Michael Leland. We also get a hand every so often from Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson with our stories. Every Friday afternoon, we release another episode. Sometimes they're 20 minutes, and other times we hit the 2-hour mark. How long will week number 8 be? Find out next Friday when Under the Golden Dome is published at iowapublicradio.org. It's also pushed to iTunes or Google Play with subscriptions. That happens next Friday afternoon. I'm your host for Under the Golden Dome, John Pimble.